Okay, I think it's 6 o'clock, and we'll get this going here. Commissioner Winter said he was a solid maybe he would make it here. I know he's got some other things going on. So to begin, we'll go around the room and introduce the board members, and then we'll go over and introduce the committee members and anybody else that's here. So I'll start. I'm Commissioner Ed Pop. I'm from Benton County, and I'm the chair of the board.
I'm George Fiedler from Stearns County. I'm a resident.
I'm Mary Eberle from Sherburne County, citizen rep.
Wayne Bauernschmidt, citizen rep from Wright County.
Melissa Fee, citizen member of Wright County.
Al Amdahl, citizen member of Stearns County.
J.C. Wallace, citizen member of Wright County.
Zidia and Jim Stearns County, citizen member.
Lee Lenzmeyer, Stearns County.
Dandy, Sherburne County, citizen member.
Tina Diedrich, Wright County Commissioner.
Lynn Gruing, Stearns County.
Lisa Fobey, Sherburne County.
My name is Susan Deggy. I am here as the library's legal representative.
Karen Ponsack, Executive Director.
Good evening. I'm Jamie Trenum, Associate Director of Collection Development.
I'm Amy Schronk, one of the Collection Development Librarians.
I'm Elizabeth Numala. I'm also a Collection Development Librarian.
Neil Vig, Patron Services Coordinator here for St. Cloud.
Chris Getz, Technical Services Coordinator.
I believe we have one committee member in the audience over here.
Lori Wulu, Technical Services.
All right. I want to thank all them that served on that committee and got us all the good information that we need. So with that, we will go ahead.
All right.
We'll do a 30 to 45 minute presentation, and then we'll take questions at the end about what was in the packet. If that's an okay starting part for everybody. And if you hit number 5, I think that'll bring the lights down so people can see the slides. So.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks everyone for coming this evening. Again, my name is Jamie Trenum, Associate Director of Collection Development. To start out, I just wanted to give you all a little background in terms of why we're currently discussing this issue. Great River, like many other libraries across the U.S., has seen an increase in requests for reconsideration, which is the process used for patrons to challenge or request removal from items from the library shelves or addition of items to the library shelves. At Great River, we've seen 8 different titles in the past year receive forms. And I do want to note that we have about a little less than 475,000 titles in the collection. So this is a small percentage. However, it's also the largest number of requests for reconsideration that I've seen in my time as Associate Director with Great River. Some of the titles had multiple forms submitted, and each of those forms receives a personal letter, detailing personal meaning it's customized for that individual. And that process starts with me, and I do the initial response to determine whether or not that item was still within the library's collection development policy. So since last September, I have written over 15 responses. And that process is important, but it does take time. We wanted to make sure that we were giving the process ample time to be reviewed. So because we had so many requests, it did warrant an examination of our current policy and procedure. So in May of this year, Karen and I had recommended a committee to review the collection development policies. And specifically, we wanted to hone in on the selection criteria or those criteria that help us decide what to add to the collection. We wanted clarity around the cataloging processes, and that's how we decide where items are shelved within the library based on their intended audience. And we saw a desire for a more efficient and more transparent process for the request for reconsideration. Well, this looks a little different than it did on my screen. But what I want to share with you is that we had 11 committee members. It's a combination of both staff here at the library as well as board members. And so we had Commissioner Phoebe, we had Lynn Gruing, and we also had Wayne Bauernschmidt as our board representation on the committee. We took this responsibility really seriously, and we had 7 full committee meetings together since June. So this is how we spent our summer vacation. We also had at least 5 subcommittee meetings. So that's an estimated 190 hours that we saw each other this summer. The recommendation that you have before you tonight is based on our work. We examined policies from other library systems, including our neighbors, East Central Regional Library. We looked at Anoka County Library, Hennepin County Library, and other libraries across the state as well as across the nation. We reviewed the legal precedent, including the 2022 challenge last year of It's Perfectly Normal at East Central Regional Library. And we worked together to develop clear, transparent policies using plain language. So to begin, we began at the beginning. Why does the collection exist? So we started with the basics. The collection exists to support the library's mission, vision, and strategic framework. So this graphic is likely familiar to you. It's our current strategic framework, and it was approved and adopted by the Board of Trustees in 2021. As we go through the policy, you'll see that I kind of follow the chapters. So within the chapter of the collection goals and principles, you'll see language from the theory of change, that the library strives to be a trusted resource for people in GRL's communities to find information they need to thrive. We also wanted to incorporate the core values of the organization. The library's core values were developed by staff, and they were approved by the Board of Trustees in 2015. The board reaffirmed its commitment to diversity and inclusion in August 2020, and the core values were also incorporated into the 2021 strategic plan. So as you review the collection goals and principles, you'll find language from these core values incorporated into the text. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Neil Vig, our patron services coordinator.
Thank you, Jamie. So at the foundation of any library, you will find the idea of intellectual freedom, which gets defined as freedom that allows people to think about or study what they want. And as an organization, Great River Regional Library recognizes that affirming intellectual freedom principles will mean that the library provides access to materials containing information and ideas that may be controversial, unconventional, unpopular, and even offensive to some. So where does this idea even come from? Well, if you look through it, it's from the First Amendment, which does state Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So this is what the library is. This helps the library provide such wide variety of learning viewpoints within the community. And as the community grows and changes, so do we.
I'll turn it over to Amy Schronk, collection development librarian.
Okay, now this is going to look a little different. There we go. So I have a cool video for you all. Our the father of our modern library science is S.R. Ranganathan. He was a librarian in India, and he came up with this in the 1930s. Let's see if I have a play button. Maybe if I just click on it. Nope. Okay. I swear it's a fun little video.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to keep you all awake. There we go. I'm just going to go ahead and stop that. We don't need to see the rest of that. So anyway, in addition to Rang and Nathan, as you walked in on the table, there was a chart of comparison of selection theories. And that came from my wonderful library science textbook back in the day, Developing Library and Information Center Collections. So it's a great read if you ever want to check it out. So I just want to highlight a couple, no particular order or reason, but McCulvin in 1925 emphasized information should be as accurate as possible. That seems pretty obvious, but, you know, I just want to make sure we have our facts straight. And Drury in 1930 said, do select fiction. So pointing out the importance of having leisure reading available to people. And Haynes in 1950 talked about practice impartiality and selection. Select widely, select for a lot of different folks. And also what's kind of implied in there is, as a selector yourself, you don't let your own personal preferences take over when you're selecting. So we select for all. And then Broaddus in 1981 said, be aware of the impact of publicity that might stimulate demand. So a lot of times our patrons will request something and they'll say, yep, I've read it in the Star Tribune this weekend and it looks like a wonderful book. And we'll be like, yep, okay, we will go for it. So according to Zipa.com in 2022, over 4 million books were published, self-published and commercial published. That's a lot of books. So how do we narrow that down? Here are some ways. Again, no particular order, but this is what we do in selection. So we look at the circulation data on books that we have currently by the author. So that's a wonderful thing. I know back in the day before we had all of this computerized, that was a really hard thing to even, you know, grasp. But there also wasn't as many books published. So, you know. Also in 2022, our patrons requested approximately 10,000 items. So I feel like we're doing a really good service for them. They don't have to spend all their own money on books and resources to get what they need. And so another thing we like in selection is we like to have critical reviews, again, because we don't read the books. It's nice to, you know, rely on these reviews and figure out what would be good to add to our collection. There are some exceptions to that, though, and one of the main ones I want to point out recently, so the new Patty Wetterling book is coming out next week, but that was a really large local interest story. It was put out by the Minnesota Historical Society Press. Great press, so we're going to get that even without a review. And by the way, there's currently, well, there's more than 117 holds on it. So just so you know. And then what we also do is we do a lot of needs assessment. You know, what does our collection need? What are the gaps? You know, things like knitting and dinosaurs, I mean, all that's really popular and everything, but, you know, maybe we do need other things in our collection. And so if we have the opportunity to buy it, we will. And then we also do a needs assessment of stuff that is currently in our collection. Perhaps for some reason it's become very popular and we aren't sure why. Maybe it's becoming a new movie. So the holds ratio has gone up, so we will repurchase copies too. Fill that demand. So.
Okay, to the question of where we decide where to place items, there are many factors in one primary question. Who is the intended audience? Who is the author trying to reach? This can be determined from publisher information and reviews, and that, as Amy just mentioned, that happens as part of the selection process. Catalogers can also get an indication of where the selectors intend for the book to go by looking at the fund code printed on the work slip that travels with books through the cataloging process. And I just happen to have a new book, and the slip that travels with it contains such information as the title and the author and the number of copies we've bought and the price of each copy, but also the fund code that we're pulling from when we purchase a book. So in my example here, fund code is JF for juvenile fiction. That's a pretty strong indication that it will end up in the juvenile fiction collection. The level of complexity of the text and subject matter and the graphic design of the book itself can also provide clues. Simple sentence structure and basic vocabulary are standard in children's books. As readership grows more mature, books become thicker, words and sentences become longer, and the ratio of illustrations to text shifts more towards text. Educational reading measures such as Lexile, accelerated reader, and reading counts can also provide information on the target audience and the reading level of the work. And these measures are also a good indicator to both parents and educators if a book is likely to be of interest to a child or if it's a book that a particular child is going to be able to successfully read. I mentioned graphic design a little bit ago. A thin book with colorful pictures on every page is likely to be for children. A work of fiction whose main characters are grade schoolers or middle schoolers will generally be classified as a juvenile book. And if the characters are high schoolers dealing with kinds of issues that high schoolers encounter, that work is likely young adult. So in the book example I brought with me, it's got middle school kids on the cover. On page one, it establishes that our protagonist is 91 days into the sixth grade. It's got illustrations every few pages. So this is very likely to be a juvenile book. And I can pass this book and the work slip around, and if anybody has other ideas, I'm open to hear them.
It's not cataloged, so we need this back.
Sometimes the boundaries between juvenile and YA and YA and adult are a little fuzzy. And when that happens, we consult with our in-house experts in the children's room, and they can provide guidance on appropriate placement within the library for these titles. We also can check to see where other public libraries in Minnesota are beyond to place these works. When we get record copy to bring into our catalog, if there is a juvenile fiction subdivision on the subject headings within the record, then we know at least one library thinks it's a juvenile book. So those are the tools and considerations and resources that we use when we make a determinants of where to place an item in the Great River Collection.
All right. So one of the questions that has come up along the way is labeling of materials. How does the library label books? Typically, materials are labeled by the intended audience primarily as a wayfinding tool and also to determine for library staff where those items should be shelved within the library. So the book that Chris is passing along, once it is cataloged on its spine, it will have a label that says JF or JFIC for juvenile fiction. The spine label isn't an indicator that all of the items in that area are appropriate for all readers of that age range. And that is because there can be many reasons why somebody is accessing a certain type of material. For example, large print, although we typically think of large print for folks with low vision, it's also a great tool for reluctant readers, for kids who have learning disabilities, English language learners, whoever needs to maybe see the text larger on a page with less distraction. And we do know that children mature at different levels, and not all children develop at the same rates. So it's hard to say that every book in a particular area is going to be quote-unquote okay for that child. Also, the library, we wanted to clarify within this section of the cataloging and placement of library materials section that the library doesn't endorse materials by including them in the collection. We're trying to showcase the depth and breadth of the world at large. We're not promoting any particular view. The same goes with the displays or the merchandising within the library. Our goal is to show that there's a little something for everyone and maybe something that you did not expect. In the collection management section, we wanted to clarify reasons why the library may choose to remove materials from its collection. As Amy said, there are over 4 million items published. That was last year. So as the library collection continues to grow, we need to remove some books so that we have room for additional titles on the shelf. So what are the factors that we consider when we're looking at whether to remove materials? It's usually based on 4 factors. One is the item damaged. We try to repair and maximize the investment that we've made in the materials, but sometimes, you know, there's just no curing water damage or mold in a book. We will remove books when they're factually inaccurate or obsolete. For example, when new discoveries are made in dinosaurs or in the planets, you know, we had to remove some of the books that referred to Pluto as a planet. When items are no longer in demand as evidenced by circulation history. So we look to our community in terms of how they're using the library to help us make decisions of which books or titles have you lived their useful life with the library and are ready to move on. And also we'll remove books when they're superseded by a newer edition or newer titles on the topic. Amy also mentioned lots of knitting books. You know, do we need to keep all of the old knitting books? Probably not when there's new designs and patterns coming out. When it comes to responding to requests to remove materials from the collection from the public, we also wanted to consider legal implications. And before we dive into the request for reconsideration process that we're recommending, I'm going to turn it over to Susan Dagey, our legal counsel, for an overview of the issues at hand.
I don't know if I need the...
Yeah, you've got to take the mic.
Okay. Yep. We'll just use that. All right. So Karen tasked me with trying to give everyone an overview of the First Amendment rights as to how they affect library use, library policy. So I will confess I'm not a First Amendment scholar. My practice is primarily with local municipalities. That's a big chunk of my work, is working with cities around the St. Cloud area and in Wright County and in Morrison County as well. So that's kind of my background. I know a lot about government law. I know enough about First Amendment law to give some advice here today. So I kind of wanted to start with, which one do I press?
The right one.
Okay. I'm not actually going to start with Ashcroft. I'm going to start with Miller versus California, because that kind of established the three-prong standard for determining when something...
You want me to find it for you? It's up there.
No, I don't know if we have a...
Yeah, we have a Miller.
Yeah. Okay.
For the end.
Okay, there we go. So it established this three-prong test for determining when something is not subject to First Amendment protections. And that, yeah, Karen's got it on there. This is what introduced the average person applying contemporary community standards prong, which has caused some confusion, and the Supreme Court hasn't really clarified that. As shown in the slide, the Supreme Court has said it is a matter for the jury to decide in a particular region regarding that particular document or work. The second prong is whether the work depicts or describes in a patently offensive way sexual conduct specifically defined by the applicable state law. And the third prong is whether the work taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. Now, that three-prong test has been somewhat followed in a lot of federal laws and a lot of state laws. So I think it's pretty well established that this is the test that's going to move forward in the future if we see more challenges on First Amendment rights. One of the things that the court said in that case about contemporary community standards is that the primary concern is to be certain that material will be judged by its impact on an average person, rather than a particularly susceptible or sensitive person, or indeed a totally insensitive one. So we're not looking to satisfy either of the extreme ends of the spectrum. We are looking to really take a look at what is our average community standard here. And that's... that was actually quoted in the Ashcroft case. There we go. Ashcroft versus the ACLU. This was a challenge to the federal act, the Children's Online Protection Act. So it looked at how do we define a contemporary community standard when we've got works that are available across the United States, not only across the United States, but, you know, across the world. And so this was a 2002 Supreme Court case. Interestingly, it was a plurality decision, which means that the court didn't necessarily agree on the reasoning of the opinion, but they agreed in the result. And it was written by Clarence Thomas, and he is the only one, he's the only justice that was in that decision that is still on the court. So the Children's Online Protection Act kind of copied the Miller prongs, but it also kind of brought in a kind of a condition that is as related to minors. And the intent obviously was to protect minors from being able to access material that's inappropriate on an internet that's unfortunately way open to the public. and that act carried civil and criminal penalties. It was a $50,000 civil penalty and up to 6 months imprisonment for anyone who violated the act by distributing these materials on the internet to the point that they were accessible to minors. The ACLU challenged that law, said it was overly broad because it would end up restricting speech that adults had the right to receive, speech that was protected. And the decision was that, no, the act was okay because it followed the Miller standards. And because specifically prong, the third prong, that in order for it to be an actionable violation, the work as a whole had to lack serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. And so the court held that following that prong, it narrowed the applicability of the Children's Online Protection Act, and it saved it from being overly broad. So they never really answered what community standards should be applied when it's something that is geographically unrestricted like the internet. Justice O'Connor was advocating for some sort of national standard, and the concern there was that, you know, if you're offering a book or an art piece on the internet, it may be acceptable by community standards in one area and not acceptable in another. So how can you be prosecuted under a federal act in Missouri when it would be perfectly acceptable in California? So that was kind of the concern of the ACLU, but they ended up kind of sidestepping that and not really addressing, not really, you know, advocating for this nationwide community standard. So it's still on a case-by-case basis based on the particular community. There were exceptions to liability, and that was where the content provider had some sort of controls, some sort of method to verify age of the persons that were accessing the restricted content. But that still was kind of, in my opinion, that's kind of burdensome because you have to think, okay, when is this something that I'm going to have to control access to? And then I'm going to move on. Okay, I can go. Yeah, this one. Island Trees Union Free School versus PICO. This is one of the early cases regarding requests for removal of books from library shelves. And it was a school board. So the school board, this had some extreme facts. The school board ignored its own review policy. It had a review policy, completely ignored it. It ignored the advice of teachers, librarians, literary experts. It established an ad hoc book review committee, which was not part of its own review policy. And that was comprised of parents and staff. And then it ignored the recommendations of the ad hoc review policy. So kind of extreme facts. The school board was definitely going kind of off on a tangent with this one when they decided they were going to remove books and not return them to the shelves. And in this case, the Supreme Court said that the school board may not remove books from library shelves simply because they like the ideas in those books and seek by their removal to prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion. So the school board did violate the rights of the students with regard to that, to those removals. And the court further stated that the school board does have significant discretion to determine the content of their school libraries, but that discretion may not be exercised in a narrowly partisan or political manner. So you still have to be extremely careful, I think, trying to remove books from a school library.
Susan?
Yeah.
Just one quick question. When the board removed the books, was it because somebody had objected to the books, or why did the school board make that decision?
That's correct. There were three new members of the school board who brought forward this idea to remove these books. So they were pushing it. It was actually, I believe, the result of a conservative kind of think tank position that these books are un-American. So that's how they came to be removed.
but it was definitely, you know, they were looking at them because of the political nature of the books, and they were trying, you know, they were trying to impose that standard upon the school, library. All right. Then we have Sund. This is a more recent case, Sund versus Wichita Falls. Again, this is a federal court decision, but it's at the district level, which means it hasn't been appealed up through the federal court system. It's the district court, which is similar to our state trial court. And from there, if you don't like the opinion, you appeal it to the district court of appeals based on the region that you're in, and from there up to the Supreme Court. So this one did not get appealed. And it has been cited in a more recent case I'll talk about, Little versus Llano County. And this was at issue, was a city council resolution that established a process that citizens in Wichita Falls could petition to have books removed from the children's section and placed in the adults section. And Wichita Falls is, well, at the time was apparently a community of about 100,000 people, but it only required 300 people to petition to get a book removed to the children's, from the children's to the adult library. And there, you know, the court recognized that a city does have some interest here in protecting children, but they had gone too far. The books that they were kind of the forefront of this case, they were picture books written for very young children, and the subject was having gay or lesbian parents. And so that was the objection, was that content in the book. And both of the books that were removed, or at least that were challenged in this case, were endorsed by educators, psychologists, and librarians, and even the local library administrator, who probably has a good sense of who's using the library and, you know, what's appropriate for that library. And so the court decided in favor of the plaintiffs and enjoined the city from imposing that resolution, that process of petition. And the court held there that removing books to the adult section, just merely moving from children to adult, placed a significant burden on library patrons' ability to access the book. And it cited back to the PICO case, which was the Board of Education of Island Trees, as the precedent for that. And the court also noted that the resolution did not establish any means for timely review or appeal of the removal decision. So that was kind of the secondary justification for that decision. All right, now we're going to go back in time. Oroznik versus Jacksonville. And this case was kind of an early case that established that children do have First Amendment rights. This one is interesting. It had nothing to do with books. It had to do with a city ordinance that made it a crime for drive-in movie theaters that were viewable from public streets or public places to show any films containing nudity. So if anybody could see a naked person in the film as they're driving by the theater, that would be a criminal violation of that ordinance. And the court there recognized that the cities have the right to enact reasonable time, place, and manner regulations on speech that are geared toward advancing a legitimate public purpose. But cities are limited because their ordinances have to be generally applicable to the speech and can't differentiate between types of speech. And the only exception to that would be pornography, which, you know, mere nudity is not pornography. So here, the goal of protecting children and the general public from unwanted images was a violation of their free speech rights. This, like I said, the city could prohibit all drive-in theater screens from being visible to the public, but they could not single out the films with nude scenes. So if the issue is you don't want the public to access potentially unwanted images, then they can't access any images. So the government cannot act as a censor. All right. Ginsburg versus New York. This is actually a pretty old case. But this did establish a definition of obscenity with regard to minors, which is very similar to our Miller standard. But it does bring in that it's patently offensive to prevailing standards, and it's utterly without redeeming social importance for minors. So it was particular to minors, and it can't appeal to the prurient, shameful, or morbid interest of minors. And it kind of differentiated between children and adults. So it is a little bit, you can go a little further to protect minors, but it's still, there's still going to be this factor test. You're still going to be looking at community standards. Tinker versus Des Moines Independent School District. This was an older case, 1969. So these cases are as old as I am. And this one challenged a school rule which prohibited students from wearing black armbands. And this was as a protest, really free speech, a protest showing their disapproval of the war in Vietnam. And this rule, again, was overturned by the court, and they held that wearing the armband was an exercise of pure speech. I haven't heard that pure speech anywhere else, so I'm not sure what they intended with that. But they were saying it wasn't intended to incite anything. They were just merely wearing this as a symbol of their beliefs. And that's, so the court struck down the school's rule that prohibited them from wearing that. And the rationale was that, you know, schools do have some interest in controlling what goes on within the school, especially as it relates to anything that would interfere with the school's work or with the rights of other students. And in this case, no classrooms were disrupted. The wearing of the black armbands didn't have significant response. And so the court said it was merely speculation that they banned this as a method of avoiding controversy. All right, go from here. And then Counts versus Cedarville. This is a 2003, again, a federal district court case. It did not get appealed, so it's not binding precedent. You ruined the punchline there.
Sorry.
I was going to wait to the end to tell you what books it was about. Okay, in this case, the school district required students to provide parental consent, written consent, in order to access certain books from the school library. And this rule came about after one parent asked the school to reconsider the book. It went through their reviewing process, and the reviewing committee voted unanimously in favor of keeping the book. The librarian then presented the recommendations to the school board, who voted, no, we're going to restrict access to this book. You have to have parental consent. So even though this book was accessible elsewhere, the student could have gotten it and indeed did have some of the Harry Potter books at home, and they were freely available. The court found that restriction alone, having to provide parental consent, was a loss of First Amendment rights, such a loss of rights, even though minimal, is injurious. So they were able to move forward with their claim against the school district. But I thought that case was interesting that there was the Harry Potter books, which are so generally acceptable, I think, in this country. And the big thing that they were concerned with is the witchcraft, you know, the references to witchcraft, and probably a little bit to they saw Harry Potter as kind of resisting his parental unit's influence, but not a very strong case for them to move forward with. All right, and then we go on to, we did Miller. Oh, that's the statute.
Two more slides.
Yeah. Okay. And this is the Minnesota statute that, in essence, codifies the Miller three prongs. So you can see it's almost lockstep what the court held in Miller. So we're still applying contemporary community standards of the average person. It depicts sexual conduct and in a patently offensive manner, and taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. All right.
There you go.
So these are the ones that I kind of alluded to that are upcoming. Little versus Llano County, Texas. This one is currently on appeal at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. It was argued in June. They haven't handed down a decision yet, and it likely will probably wend its way up to the Supreme Court. The case, this revolves around a county law library, and the library was restricting access to children's books, a couple different series, and a couple different books, and this was after a very small number of members in the community pushed for removal. To give you an example, one of the books was the butt and fart book series. I haven't personally read, but apparently they depict bodily functions in a humorous manner. Additional books that were removed were In the Night Kitchen by Maurice Sendak and It's Perfectly Normal by Robbie Harris, which I think you've all heard about. The group claimed that the books were obscene and were promoting grooming behavior. Now, I've seen some Maurice Sendak, but I haven't seen that particular book. I have reviewed It's Perfectly Normal, and I kind of agree with the court, with the district court there, that it doesn't meet the standard of obscenity. I mean, it's more or less a cartoonish book that kind of helps children understand what's going on when they start going through adolescence. So these books were removed not only from the shelves of the library, but they were also removed from the library catalog. And this is not a school library. This is the county library. So the patrons could still check out the books. This is what the library board said. They can still check them out. They just have no idea, you know, that these books exist or that they're in the library. But somehow they can still check them out. And the district court there held that the plaintiffs had a valid claim, that their First Amendment rights were validated, and it's enough that the physical books were hidden from view, even if they put them back on the catalog. So I think the removing them from the library catalog was kind of the icing on the cake there. Let's see. I don't really have much on the Texas book rating legislation, but this Virginia case I think this came down in August of 22 that the district court judge dismissed a challenge that this book was obscene for children under the state law. So the court said, no, it's not obscene. It should not be restricted under state law. It can be distributed to minors. So I have a few takeaways from my review of the statutes, of the case law. First is children do have First Amendment rights that are protected. Public libraries are held to a very similar standard to school libraries, but it's a little different because it recognizes they serve the larger constituency and do not have the same interests as a school in preserving order and ensuring the work of the school is not disrupted. Removing books based upon the message or idea in the book will likely subject a library to a lawsuit. It's just a clear First Amendment violation when you are making your decision based solely on a message or idea in the book. If the book does not meet the Miller test, then removal will likely be overturned by the court. And in such cases, the damages might be nominal. If you're suing under federal law, a violation of a federal law or a constitutional right, there's something called a 1983 claim, a Section 1983 claim, and that allows you, if you're successful in your suit, to recover all your costs and attorney's fees that you incurred in bringing this suit. And that's where, you know, the damages really come in. So the court might award, you know, a dollar to the plaintiff, but they also would award their attorney's fees and costs, which could be huge. And in addition to that would be the cost of the library's own cost of defense, which can be substantial as well. So just some considerations. The other takeaway I have is that, you know, community standards, as hard as they are to define, is only one factor. And we really have to focus on the average person within the community and not the groups at either end of the spectrum. And it is an extremely high standard for a book as a whole to lack any serious value of some kind. So those are kind of my takeaways. I know that's a lot of information. This is the stack of cases I reviewed, and most of them were printed back two-sided, so it's quite a stack.
And Susan will be here for questions as we finish up. We're almost through. If you guys are doing all right, we're getting there.
Karen?
Yep.
I just want a clarification. When you talk about juveniles and children, can you define the ages so that it's a little bit clear? So children books are, I'm assuming, until 12?
Let's put a pin in that and come back to it, because I want to defer to the experts over here on that subject in particular. and I think it'll be better with the lights on. So some of you have seen this slide when we've done the county budget presentations. When we talk about community standards and what Great River people think, we wanted to point out that largely in the survey that we just did, our patrons are highly satisfied with our collection. And one of the major concerns we've seen is not necessarily the content of the books, but the fact that people can't get them fast enough and that we don't have enough. So just know that most of the concerns we've heard from patrons have more to do with the availability materials than the opposite. And then one of the pieces the committee wanted to pull together, and it's outlined in the policy in front of you, is the request for reconsideration process. Part of the reason we went on this journey as a group was to sort out what does it mean if something gets to the point of appeal, because that hadn't happened in over 20 years. So the committee worked really hard to pull together a timeline. We've consulted with Susan on best practices and other library systems. And what you see in our recommendation for the policy includes that process, even though we typically don't have the board approve like workflows and procedures. We felt like this one rose to the level of actually needing some board action so that everybody's on the same page going forward, and it's kind of codified in what we do. So we have four different layers of review. Currently, these layers aren't spelled out anywhere other than the request for reconsideration goes to Jamie as Associate Director of HR, and she provides a written response. Now we're asking for the board to approve a policy that includes four layers of review. The first layer would be having a reconsideration panel that would be appointed by me that includes members of the Great River staff, probably people that you see here if it happens next year. The panel would then do that first layer of review like Jamie has done, but it would not just involve one person. It would have multiple people taking multiple things into account. And then if that panel would respond and that person who submitted the concern was unhappy with it, they could appeal then to Jamie and I. We would have an appeal conference similar to what we did with the individuals this year. We just actually would put that step into policy. And then if that decision is appealed, the board would then have information presented about that process and decide whether to form a review committee. That review committee would include a member from the initial panel, Jamie, myself, or whoever is in our roles in the future, and then three members of the Great River Board. And then if the board votes to form that committee, the committee would make the decision. Whatever that decision is made is final and isn't subject to reconsideration for another 5 years. The idea is to have a process that's transparent, that's easy to follow, that has multiple layers, and that saves everyone time in the end. Like, we don't want to have the same title coming to the Great River folks every year if we've already done this much work on the title last year. And then we had one of our committee members, Teresa Jacobs, who is not with us today, but she did a nice job of pulling together, okay, what does this look like if we're meeting quarterly? How does this process look from the patron perspective?
because we are asking that if somebody is submitting a request that they are an actual library patron, and what's the maximum amount of time that this would take, knowing that the board only meets every other month and how those timelines line up. So you can see it would take some time to get through the process, but this is roughly the entire process. So we would want it to be a thoughtful process and give everybody enough time to consider and respond, and for the board to actually have a point where they weigh in on whether to form that committee. So that was the timeline in a nutshell. Is there anything you'd add there, Jamie? So the time everybody's been waiting for, the questions. What I'll ask is we'll turn the lights on here, and then the members of the staff, members of the panel will be coming up, or the committee will come up here, and then we can start with maybe Zuria's question about children's books, and then, you know, Ed, this is your meeting.
Okay.
So.
We'll let the panel get settled in.
And as we're doing that, I just want to thank the members of the committee for the amount of time that they've spent pulling this stuff together. It's been a lot of time, so.
Okay.
I want to acknowledge
that. All right, and Zuria, you had the question, so go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify, can you give us some age ranges for what do we define as a children's collection, as a juvenile, as young adults, and then adults? And is there any specific criteria that the library follows for that?
Mainly in general, things in the children's room are grades 4 and below, or I don't know what age range that is anymore. And the thing is, young adult used to not exist. So we do have quite a bit in the children's room that would technically probably fall up into the YA section. No. Nowadays, but back before YA started and became a thing, that lives in the children's room. So YA is typically for our terms grade 5 and up, and that's up through, 12th grade. And then we have some new adult stuff, which sort of overlaps, college, concerns, interests, things like that, getting started as a new adult.
How about the juvenile? Is that a separate term? Juvenile selection?
Is that a Chris question, maybe? I don't know. Like, no. it's juvenile is like the fatter books, right? Usually.
Chapter books.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Or, if they're in a juvenile nonfiction section, it's going to be the thing you need to write your report or, that kind of stuff. But the dinosaur books live there, too. Like, it's mm-hmm. the true stuff. So,
right. So we do have, kind of juvenile biographies, too, that are also kind of picture book-like in the nonfiction area. So, yeah. Right.
Anybody else? Anybody else want to comment?
I'll just say that juvenile is kind of a catch-all term. It could be middle grade readers. It could be small children. We have a number of different collections things can go in. There's the young adult stuff for people, adolescents and teenagers. We have board books and picture books for children, which are really intended to be read to children. We have early independent readers for kids who are just learning to read, that they can read all by themselves. But they all kind of fall under the umbrella of juvenile for our purposes.
George had a question.
I don't have a question. When I can, I have some comments, and I do have some questions throughout the document. I hope you'll allow me and bear with me to go through that.
Okay. Stacey?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to ask a little bit more clarifying question about that. So when what you're talking about is that you have a juvenile collection. That's what's on the spine. That's where it gets shelved in whatever size library we have. You have a YA section. It's on the spine. That's where it's cataloged on the spine. That's where it gets shelved. And then you have just general fiction, nonfiction that's considered adult. That's where it's shelved on the library shelf. So you really have three separate categories.
That's correct, but also a separate collection for board books, easy picture books, and early independent creative books.
Thank you. So I do have a question related. Do we have a section called restricted?
No.
Okay. Is there a reason why we can't have that, or...?
Are you talking about with regard to children's books or?
Any book.
Yeah. You really can't. And the court has said that putting any type of restriction on that it does implicate First Amendment rights. So, like the school cases, you can't require parental consent for certain books. You can't put them in the adult section to make sure that children aren't accessing them. I mean, that's just not something the library can do.
So I think most of the controversy we've had over the last 6 months concerns minors.
Mm-hmm.
The access to certain books for minors. And so you're saying the library can't restrict certain books so minors can't walk to the library and pick them up and look at them?
Not if they're not, pornography. Not if they're not...
this definition of pornography holds.
The
Miller case is very subjective.
Yeah.
It's got all kinds of subjective terms in it.
Yeah. And that's the state law. Mm-hmm. Also.
Is what?
That's also the state law.
Right.
The Minnesota statute is the Miller standard.
Right. I'll get to my points when I can, okay?
Yeah, no, I understand where you're coming from. I mean, the ultimate, I guess, responsibility is not on the library, it's on the parent. To monitor the books that their children are accessing.
But we can have a whole long discussion on this.
Mm-hmm.
Do we not think that the library has some part in this at all?
Not as far as restricting, but I do agree with separating out the categories between children and young adults. And that primarily is based on the ability of the readers to understand or even be interested in the subject matter.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have a few questions, just some clarifying through this. Should I start in the beginning part or where?
Sure.
So in the beginning, under introduction, in here it was stated originally, monies are spent wisely, so it's public monies were spent wisely. That was crossed out, and I would like to include in here somewhere that even at the end of that sentence, the selection of library resources are utilizing public funds. I think it's important to acknowledge that the libraries are funded with public money primarily.
Yeah, I think we moved it. I think it's because we moved it. If you go to 4B, it's the second bullet now for selection. Okay. It's cost in relation to the wise use of available resources. Like, we were trying to simplify this as much as possible.
Where is it at?
If you look on page 12, 4B, we were working in addition to, we wanted this to be something people could read and understand and it wasn't repetitive. So we moved the cost section to that second bullet. We also changed the order of selection criteria to be alphabetical rather than having patron requests being the first.
Is it 4B or 4D?
4B as in boy. Yep.
Page 12.
Number 12.
I know.
So it's the second bullet.
Okay.
Yep. In relation to the wise use of available resources.
I'm looking at the edited one, which includes both. So what page would that be on? 4B?
Well, and if you're in the markup, then that is page 4 and 5. You can see how we redid that entire section with the bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And number 1 was requests by users. And we felt like that implied that requests were the primary reason why we select materials, and it's not necessarily the primary reason. We decided it was better to reorder that, simplify it, and then add in things that we are taking into account. So you can see the second bullet becomes cost in relation to the wise use of available resources, and then further down, request by library users, and then policy, budget, and shelving space may limit the ability of Great River to provide all requested materials. So we did try to incorporate the idea of using resources wisely.
Public money.
Yep.
But it doesn't say that in here. Public.
So
money.
We could add the word public to it. Yeah.
I think that's important. So you were funded by public.
Yeah,
dollars.
We had no intention of. Yeah. It's a fair point.
It implied, obviously, with this, but
yeah.
I think it should be included as it was originally. It's just if you want, I can see how it could fit in there somewhere, but I think that should be included. As it reflects, I mean, libraries are for the public, and you guys, I want to say thank you for everyone that was on the committee. This is a lot of work after receiving it and looking at, you know, there's the added, you know, detail and the process for the reconsideration. That is really good. I'll skip back to that really quick because that was just one comment on there. On the, I'm not going to say a page, it was number 12, number one, mailed or emailed forms will only be considered if an individual submitting is homebound. I would suggest, I don't know why that is being considered, as email is a pretty significant way of communicating these days, and why it would be restricted only to an inbound person to be able to communicate via email. So I don't know how to.
Are you okay with me just answering what the thought was there? So we don't currently accept email at all. We've wanted to keep the process as tight as possible. So it's always been paper back and forth, because then we have clear documentation going back and forth, and we don't end up with these weird email chains that happen often when people are just responding by email. We feel like that part of the process is actually working fairly well. It keeps the integrity of the process. It doesn't turn into this just exchange. It's an actual formal request and a formal response back. And we felt that was important.
No option to do. You've done this before via email?
People have asked for it. It has been better not to, because even you wanted to talk to you about your specific.
We actually have responded via email, and that was very hard to manage because it's so quick to respond that while somebody can take a fair amount of time to collect the information and the research about the title, and then somebody might be replying, you know, while they're in line at Target on their phone, you know, it just creates this immediacy that the process really requires significant thought. And the more we increase the immediacy, the harder it is to manage this process. And so we really want it, after that experience, it became clear that we need to stick to the paper form.
Okay, so you have it clear, the reason why.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That mm-hmm. is just fine. That was my big, I put why.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that answer. Let me see here. Just a couple other ones.
Can I jump in on that, please?
Sure, go ahead.
Just to tie on, I love your reasoning. I think it holds up. My one question is there the ability to send them an editable document to fill out so that they can type it, but then they have to print it out and turn it in?
Yeah, I think what our thought was is once the policy is approved, we'll actually develop the form, because there were a couple of forms that we looked at that we really liked, because, yeah, the one we have now is really old and dated and needs to be improved.
Okay.
Yeah,
great.
Total acknowledgement there.
Okay. Next question was 4B. Materials are selected on the merits of the content as a whole. What does that mean? So I'd be able to explain it. Someone asked me.
Where is
sure.
4B, general selection criteria. It's in the
okay.
paragraph
Thank
above.
You.
Okay. So it's not unusual for a book to have a sentence or a page, a paragraph that somebody will object to. It's much more infrequent for an entire book. So we're not, so say somebody says, somebody writes an entire book, they put a ton of research into it, they put a lot of thought into it, and they have two sentences that are really rather offensive to a lot of people. We're not going to have those two sentences outweigh the entire book. It's kind of like when you're looking at a person. You don't take the one worst feature of that person and hold that as your value of what that person is in their entirety. You're looking at everything that they've done in their life. And similarly, when we're looking at a book, we're looking at the book as a whole. We're looking at all of it. We're not saying that this book was absolutely fantastic except this one page, and so then we have to give up the 300 pages of really well thought out, really well written things because there was something objectionable on one page.
Mm-hmm. And if you recall the legal discussion, it also lines up with the state statute around mm-hmm. obscenity and the test. Oh, yeah.
I'm familiar. Under one of the criteria, it says suitability. Is that you're going to? You know, that'll be kind of falling into the same. It's availability and suitability is one of the criteria. Who determines the suitability? I mean, like, or what? It's probably very similar. So
suitability has a lot of different meanings. One of the things that we're looking at as a public library is actually, like, physically, is it suitable? So, for example, we'll get requests for books that have tear-out pages. As a general rule, if we know that in advance, we aren't going to buy it because we don't want it to fall apart on us. Similarly, spiral-bound books, it's not that we never buy spiral-bound books. If a lot of people really want one, we will usually try to accommodate them and try to reinforce that spiral binding. But we want books, I mean, we have some books in our collection that have checked out 100 times. We want to spend public money wisely. We want books that will withstand the test of time, ideally. We don't always know that in advance. Sometimes we order a book and it turns out that the binding isn't good. But there are other ways of looking at suitability as well. For example, large print or spoken word books. Some people can only read large print, so we need to make sure that we have things that are accessible to everybody.
I think in the committee discussion, we also talked a lot about streaming and e-books, audiobooks. Do you want to maybe speak to that as well? Do you remember what that? Do you remember that?
I'm not recalling that.
Oh, okay. So I will refresh your memory. So one of the things we've often got requests about are like series that are only available on Netflix or content that's only available on Amazon Kindle. We simply cannot purchase it. It's not available. It's not suitable for the public library because we don't have a way of offering that to other people. So that's where some of that thought.
Yeah, it comes up a lot with newspapers a lot as well. We get requests probably about once a month to get a digital subscription to the St. Cloud Times or the Star Tribune. The digital subscription is designed for one household. They don't offer an institutional subscription, which is unfortunate because that would be something that our public would absolutely love.
Yes. Thank you. That is a real relevant. Makes sense. Moving down to the next question I have is present and anticipated relevance to community needs and or local interests. So what does that mean and who determines what that is?
Well, kind of like what I touched on in the presentation. And, you know, the new Patty Wetterling book is just, I mean, it's going like hotcakes as far as requests on the hold list. And we have to keep buying more and more copies just to meet that hold ratio. And, I mean, again, you know, if there's some local event and an author is selling a book and we get to know about it, hopefully ahead of time. But if, you know, we like to try to fill those needs for people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfect. I was wondering, and this wasn't my question, do we offer any material in Braille?
We actually do have a couple books in Braille. Oh. Yes.
Okay, and those can be checked out, and just like every other book. Okay, wonderful.
We also have the Braille and Talking Book Library based out of Faribault. And so we don't collect a lot of Braille material because folks who qualify for those services have the best
resources,
thank you, Lee, available through that service. And if you can verify that you have that disability and you have need of that material, there are special formats that we don't have access to buy as the public library. So I just wanted to add on to that. Thanks.
Very cool. That is awesome. Okay, I'm going to move on so I don't take up so much of your time. The 4E, relationships with library research vendors and publishers. I'm just not familiar how that whole section works. So I was just curious to ask, like, people are coming at you every day, buy my book, they're sending stuff.
Everybody wants to get a hold of her.
I screen my calls. Like, I have to. Otherwise, I would spend all of my time talking with vendors, publishers, local authors, which, you know, I would love to have everything, but we do have limited resources and limited capacity to do that.
Okay. That kind of same goes with given material.
Gifts.
Gifts, the same kind of thing.
Yeah, we did some really cool stuff that we wish we could add, but you can't add it all.
We can't add it all. And sometimes we get things that folks don't want to throw away that maybe were in grandma's basement and are musty. So we can't say that we will accept all materials.
Okay. And then, let's see here. I did have one more question. I didn't staple it. I really should have stapled it together. Well, I'll look at it. You guys have. I'll come back around. I'll let other people ask questions.
Hey, George.
Yeah. So I want to kind of go through page by page. This is not a criticism. Anybody who was on the committee. Don't take it personal. I'm just.
We talked about whether we needed to restate that, but I think everybody. This is the opportunity to ask questions, and I realize we're a little past time, so I think everybody recognizes.
I'm giving you what I see here. Mm-hmm. I have some problem with some words.
Okay.
And some of them may be happy to glad. I don't know. So, like on page 3, under chapter 1, where it says the library strives, that's a mushy word. It's like you're really trying hard. Why don't you just say the library is a resource for people? Why keep it mushy?
I'm not seeing it.
Under
on
one.
The edited version.
Yep.
Oh.
First line under chapter 1.
Yep, I see it. That's okay.
Because you can never achieve something. You can try.
Can
try.
And actually, I think isn't that verbatim out of our? This is our current theory of change. So.
Would anybody from the committee like to comment on that? Did you discuss that, or is it just?
We discussed many words in this document.
Right.
At length. I believe 190 hours worth of.
Yeah.
Plus. And each of us homework every week. That word we did not discuss. I hear what you're saying, George. I think it's our ultimate goal to be that resource you're defining, but I think each and every day we're striving for that.
So. You don't think you've met it?
At Great River, we always try to be better. It's the blessing and the curse of Great River. Continuous improvement.
We'll note that.
Okay.
Nothing's perfect. Right?
You can flush that comment then. Okay.
Yeah.
So on page 4, again, you got a lucky word, the library aims. And if your philosophy is what you just articulated, the word is good. I don't like the word.
What is it under?
Aims.
It's on the very top.
I think that was Jamie trying to bring the word level down. Because.
You don't need that word. The library builds and sustains.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can I just throw something out? Can we all decide that we're going to either be on the edited version the marked up one or the clean one?
I'm on the edited version. That's why
on the clean one.
That's right. Not on the clean one.
Okay, so on the marked up.
I'm on the marked up one.
Okay, you're on the marked up. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so under chapter 3 on page 4 there, where it starts on monitoring the reading and viewing The last sentence says the values of one individual or family may not be imposed on another.
I know. I can't find where you are. It's the blue on page 4. I'm on the electronic version,
the
too.
It's the second paragraph under chapter 3, the last sentence. The values of one individual or family may not be imposed on another.
True.
Mm-hmm. The word may denotes a prohibition is imposed. Should the word be should? Should not?
I'm sorry, I chuckled because we've had a lot of board meetings in the past about may versus should.
I'm bringing these up as discussion items, okay?
Sorry, George.
You can flush them if you want.
Nope. I think will has also been thrown around in the past, so that we'll take it into consideration. That's a good debate.
Bottom of page 4, we're under chapter 4 where it says selection is intended, another mushy word. That's what you intend? That's fine.
What did you have in mind?
I think it should just say selection builds a collection, et cetera, et cetera.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sorry.
I think all the stuff that George is pointing out kind of states that the library has already achieved these criteria. That's like saying I'm culturally competent, and people who say that do not realize that there's a grading level for each thing, and even until you die, you never reach to the point where you can say, I have achieved the perfection in this subject or in this subject matter.
That word would be built. This word is built.
Strive or intended is that somebody is trying.
Builds is trying.
No, but...
Built is done.
That's the problem. They're not done.
The word is not built. I said the word is builds.
Okay. So the word aims that you had an objection to, so there's an aim is a goal that you're going towards.
As I said, if that's your intent, you explained it, I'm okay with it, keep it.
Okay, but again, when you say selection is, shouldn't say intended, it is intended because it's something that you're striving towards. You haven't achieved the perfect selection criteria.
You don't have to convince me. I'm putting it on the table for discussion, and if the majority of people think it's a good word, you go with it, okay? I'm pointing it out. Then when you get under the criteria, this is the meat of the topic. To me, you took out one of the most important items.
Can you say where you're at?
I'm sorry. Page 5, where it talks about an item may be included or excluded on one or more of the following criteria. The one that you took out that says suitability of subject and style for intended audience. I know you tried to lump it into the first one where you said availability and sustainability.
Suitability.
My opinion, you need to take into consideration the culture of central Minnesota. The culture of central Minnesota, as depicted in Wikipedia, it's an ethnic makeup of central Minnesota is largely representative of first settlers who came to the region, people of German and Scandinavian heritage. The majority of the area is conservative and a Christian-based community. And for the library not to take in consideration the majority, we're talking about the majority, and Susan, you talked about the average person, that would be part of that majority.
Are you talking about Stearns County?
I'm talking about central Minnesota.
All of us.
Central Minnesota.
Six county area.
If you look it up, that's what you'll see. So the criteria, in my mind, needs to take into consideration the culture of the community of what kind of collection you take in.
And you think removing that bullet?
Yeah, I think suitability of subject is really important, a really important criteria.
Okay.
Because why did we have an entourage of people come in here and complain about certain things?
I don't think that was our intent. I think it was just trying to clean up the language, honestly. But thank you for that. I don't know, other committee members, do you remember more about that?
I think that it is difficult for the library to be the sole decider of what is suitable. And that's also why we've received some complaints. Mm-hmm. So we can make, in the cataloging section, we talk about how we derive intended audience. A lot of that is coming from the publisher. And so we can challenge what the publisher has recommended, but we have limited staffing to do so. And I would hesitate to limit the scope of our collection based on the majority as well, because we need to also reflect how the community is growing.
But you did say up front, somebody said it, the library can't house everything. They can't have a selection of every book out there.
Right. You have to make conscious decisions, and that's part of your job is to make that decision, and part of your job is to use criteria that's applicable to where you live, what the culture is, and so on. The culture is conservative. This is a conservative central Minnesota. It's a little bit diverse. It's not totally diverse.
Mr. Chair,
sure.
This conversation, I think, could grow a lot. I think I don't totally agree with you, George.
That's good. That's why we're having a discussion.
There's six counties represented here. I think we're a changing, diverse community.
And Mr. Chair, I object to it based on being one of the only non-Caucasian members in this board, speaking for people of different color, different religions and stuff, saying that the library should have the majority of the collection because this is a conservative Christian society. So anybody who differs from that society should have a certain quota. So if there are 10 people who are Muslim and 10 people who are Hindus and 10 people who are Sikh, then they should have that quota of that books. I find that extremely offensive.
That's not what I said.
That's what you're implying.
No, I'm not implying anything. Listen to what I say, not what you think I'm implying.
You said this is a central Minnesota Christian conservative
yes,
society.
The majority of central Minnesota is conservative.
Yes, there is
and
no disputing
in my
that.
Opinion, you have to take that into consideration. It's a big consideration because the majority are conservative.
But this is a public library which
that's
functions
correct.
For everybody.
Right.
So it needs to be inclusive for everyone.
I'm not saying we should ban any books. I'm saying it should be part of the criteria we use to select books.
And, George, just getting to know Karen's staff and how sensitive they are to Zuria's point, look at them. They're all white. They're very well educated.
I don't see
but,
it.
But they are so sensitive to every selection that maybe is on the fringe. That's who they are. They are conservative. And as far as that comment that's here, I don't really recall it being part of the diversity side of things. It was, how are we going to serve the general public as a whole? And I think that's really the intent of that bullet.
Okay, then leave that in there, suitability of subject. That's all I'm asking. I think that's important consideration. You had it in there before. You took it out. Why'd you take it out?
We didn't know if we could actually enforce it. When you think about, so how
yeah.
Most of the books that we purchase, we don't have in hand when we're making that decision. We don't see the book, so we have to rely on the publisher, other libraries, wherever, whatever information we can find to actually make that decision.
That's good,
and,
I agree with and that.
And except the publishers don't always give us consistent and good information.
Sure, you make
and
your
so
best
And so we don't want to make a decision that's, we don't want to overpromise.
You're saying you don't want to overpromise the majority of the community?
We don't want to overpromise that we are the expert on whether a book is suitable in subject and style for every single person in Central Minnesota.
Even the American Library Association that I printed off today, so one of their criteria, the general criteria, is present potential relevance to community needs.
Yeah, and that's in there.
We have
that's
that.
That's in there. Yeah.
We
have it.
Did you have something?
Yeah, I remembered my last question, or second to the Fair. Last question. On the edited, the work marked up one, page four, chapter four, the second paragraph in there, selection is tended to build a collection in alliance with patron needs. And then again, on the fifth page, no library is able to purchase all material needed. Is that needed or requested? What books do we need versus what books are requested? What was the difference intent?
Well, not every book that we purchase is requested. Mm-hmm.
How are they needed? Who determines what's needed then?
Well, when we decided to buy Patty Wetterling's book, it wasn't in the catalog. We had no requests.
Yep.
So, that's an example.
Yeah, so we do buy books. What a person needs is going to be based on that person. And so, for example, say somebody needs a specialized legal text for some reason. As a general rule, we're not going to buy a very specialized book like that, but there are legal libraries in Minnesota that, if we're lucky, we can borrow it from them and we can get it for them. Similarly, there are people who are trying to get a college degree through distance education, and so they can't necessarily physically get to a college library, but we can get a book for them from, say, St. Cloud State and get it delivered to the Delano branch of our system through interlibrary loan. So
they need that book.
So they might need it for a college class.
But they're also requesting it.
Yeah, it's one of the ways people let us know about their needs is by requesting books from us, which we don't always necessarily buy. Sometimes we get them through interlibrary loan.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I wasn't done.
Oh, I'm sorry. Keep going.
So I'm on page 8. Bottom of page 8. This is the process. It talks about request for reconsideration form must have the individuals that do it must have an active library card. Why? That's arbitrary. If it's a public library, everybody puts funds towards a public library. Because I don't have a card, I can't.
We talked a lot about
that
actually. Mm-hmm. So here's what East Central did. East Central said you had to be a resident. But we have at least 3 or 4 towns where the borders of Great River actually go through the middle of Staples, they go through the middle of Princeton, they go through the middle of Cokato, or on the outskirts of Cokato. Like we've got, and so we felt like it was important to allow people who might not live in the region to be part of the process. And so we felt like, if you want to be involved with the library and engage with the library, you should be a patron of the library, and even if you don't live here, and if you live out of state, and you're someone who's here 2 months out of the year, you can purchase a non-resident card and actually be a patron of the library. So we felt like that was an important part of the process, so that we could include people who weren't necessarily from Central Minnesota, but were actively engaged with the library.
Okay. This one is big for me. So you got a reconsideration panel. What? Well, the whole thing, reconsideration panel. So you got a reconsideration panel, but I don't see here what criteria they use for reconsideration. If they use the same criteria that the book was brought into the library, nothing's going to change, is it?
It could.
How could it?
That's what this is going. This is why we're doing this. Nothing's going to change. I mean, if you can't recognize that at least one commissioner district is 30% Somali, and you're going to tell me that the whole ethnic makeup of this area is homogenous, I'll have to disagree.
I didn't say that.
And that doesn't include... Chill.
Lee, I didn't say that. What we're talking about the reconsideration.
George,
what
I'm commenting. You can talk to him. You can finish your soliloquy here in a minute. And in addition, I think it's, if we look around in terms of religious affiliation, I find it interesting that the Catholic newspaper, used to be called the Visitor, Central Minnesota Catholic, now half of it is English, half of it is Spanish. There's plenty of indications out there that there are significant cultural changes taking place. Take it away, George. I'm done for a while.
Okay. No doubt, Lee, I agree with what you said, but I'm not placing any value on one thing or another. I'm just saying what a fact is. The fact is the majority are conservative. That's all I said. Don't put a value on anything else. The reconsideration thing, again, my question is, if they use the same criteria as when the book was brought in the library, how will things ever change? How can anything be happening for somebody who brings that forward?
So the major difference between that is we order books without actually seeing the physical book. So we're doing it based on information that we've been provided either from the publisher or through reviewers or things like that. When we reconsider a book, we actually have already purchased the book and we can actually read the book.
Okay.
So that's one of the major differences.
That's good.
Mr. Chair, it was clear with our time together with the number of books that we take in as a library that there is no way we can read all those books.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen with the panel, we would be able to do a much more in-depth, our staff would be able to do a much more in-depth dive.
My suggestion is let's add in the criteria that's going to be used under the reconsideration panel. If it's more and different than what you've already recited here, put it in the document.
Well, I think we would be using policy as the criterion. What we don't know is what the challenge, what somebody's putting in this request for reconsideration form. So if you guys are okay, I can talk about the recataloging situation recently. Just recently, we received a request for reconsideration form within the last 12 months where somebody pointed out that it appeared that something should have been in a different collection. And what we found out is when we purchased this book, it was when it was published fairly early on. And so we made the best decision we could at the time about where it should be placed in the library. But after the staff members reviewed it, they realized that all the other libraries had put it somewhere else. And so we made the change.
Yeah.
And that's what that panel would be for, is that first level of review. This is simple.
Yeah, so I heard you say in the reconsideration panel there are additional criteria. All I'm saying is maybe we should recite that additional criteria.
How did you hear me say that?
Mm. I don't think that's
because I didn't say that.
Because I thought you said in your selection you can't read the book.
No, right.
But once somebody comes in with an issue about the book, one of the new criteria you look at is you actually look at the book in more detail.
Well,
right?
That's not criteria.
That's part of the process. But the criteria goes back to the initial criteria, where did other libraries put it?
Yeah.
And that's in the policy as we're recommending it now.
But you're using the same criteria in the reconsideration.
Right, but there's new information because now there's more libraries that have the book. So it's... What has changed since we purchased the book versus when that request for reconsideration comes through?
So just because more libraries have it, that's a good reason to keep it or not keep it?
You look like you have something.
When I have received requests for reconsideration in the past, I will read that entire book because I want to understand the issues that are presented, both from the person who submitted the form, as well as to take in the work as a whole. And so if we had a panel who was going to be reviewing it, they would be taking that deep dive and really honing in, and I would hope that everyone on the panel will read the book.
Then you can take my thoughts and flush them. My suggestion would be is put that somewhere
you'd
in
like to see that reflected.
That's what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. That's different and additional to the first criteria when you got the book in the library. Because people that submit something like that have no hope anything is going to happen.
I would disagree with you.
I would disagree.
What hope do they have if they're using the same criteria you did to bring the book in the library and they want to get the book out of the library? I'm not saying they're going to be successful. I'm saying you have to have some transparency to have hope for these people that something's going to happen, or the same group of people are going to use the same criteria that was brought in the library. You understand what I'm saying?
I don't think it's clear that your perspective reflects what's happened around here. The very fact that we're talking about a review process, and it's great that we got something in place. You know, it'll never be perfect because everyone has their own perspective. So just the fact that we got something in place and there's a way for folks to participate in the practice, I think it's significant progress. Does it reflect what I would, how I would look at situations? Probably not 100%, but you won't get to 100%. You know, it only takes 50% plus one to win an election.
I'm not saying this is not significant progress. This is needed. We know it's needed. You've done a good job on it. I'm just pointing out some things that I see as I read this.
Oh, that's good.
That's what we're here tonight for, right,
JC?
I was just going to say, I think one big change is that it can eventually get to the board, which I think was a huge frustration
absolutely
for people.
Right. Absolutely.
There was no way other than that public forum where we couldn't respond. Now they have a way. I think it's a... Overall, it's a good process. It gives us a very steady step towards, hey, the board can eventually hear this. And I think
escalating the matter.
Yeah, I think that's a huge change.
I mean, we've seen the timeline.
And, Mr. Chair, the other thing that I recall in the committee is we did say, you know, once we try this out, the process, and go through the process, we're going to learn from it.
Right.
And we're going to maybe need to make some changes.
So, George, I'm just grasping at straws here, but you're looking for something more black and white on the criteria and criteria differences between the reconsideration requester and why it was ever selected to begin with.
Correct. Right on.
So, and what we added with this step in the process is instead of it just relying on one person,
right,
it's now going to be a panel. And that panel is going to do a much deeper dive into a number of different things that we can't even list them all.
Right. And if
they do everything they can.
You could list some of them. Don't you know what they are yet?
Yeah, but how
trust
can
me,
eliminate
we'll be forgetting
some.
you don't have to eliminate some. At least you can put down what you.
But that's
now
a process piece.
I mean, I agree with JC, what she said, that the process will work its way back now. It'll be a lengthy process, undoubtedly. But it will work in the end.
The fallacy in all this is it's so subjective. You might look at a term and define it differently than I look at it. This is a starting point. I agree.
So if I may, can you put that back up? Those steps that you take for a reconsideration panel, maybe that's what George is looking for.
That was a good
Yeah. Is that something that maybe you could put in? This is what happens when somebody requests.
Yeah, that's on page.
I know that, but I mean, to make it more, that's a lot of.
That's just, but for me, that's just a timeline. I'm talking about when the panel sits down and looks at a book that somebody says, I don't like this book, what do you use as criteria to make a decision?
So, George,
First Amendment.
First Amendment.
Take it as a whole.
George, we
already listed all those.
George, I threw out like different scenarios of, okay, I've got some Jewish heritage. Well, what if we have a white supremacy book in the library? I'm a hunter.
Guns.
There was all kinds of scenarios thrown out there. I think there's so many to be black and white, because I like to be black and white, too, from an engineering side of things. And I realize that it's got to be fluid, and it's going to be a work in progress. And it isn't like we were smart enough to be like writing the Constitution of the United States where it was a timeless document. I think this is a good first step.
Hopefully it shakes out, and maybe we
come back in a year and here are the top 10 reasons black and white we can put in there. But I think it would be too confining right now, in my opinion. But
thanks, Wayne.
Melissa had a comment.
Thank you for all the work you've done. But one thing I think we need to also consider is the patrons who are requesting reconsideration, have they read the entire work? Or are they looking at one sentence or one page of a book? Right. And they need to be judging that. That has to be judged by the work itself. And so that's something to consider, too, in deciding whether there's something black or white.
That's an excellent point, and maybe the people that come in and are bringing up a book that they don't like, maybe we should require them, ask them to say specifically, what don't you like about this book? Have you read this book? Check. Yeah.
We do.
They'll probably
right?
lie.
Mm-hmm. We do that.
It's currently part of the process, it's been hard to hold people accountable to that.
Yeah.
It's been clear that there's been some copy-paste happening this year, and it's been clear that people haven't read the whole book, even though we have said that they should on the form. So, you know, it's a good concept.
Okay, we beat this in the ground, I know. But
yeah, we've had copy-paste at our board meetings.
So I have a couple more comments. So on page 10, this is the edited version. I think you talked about this in the presentation. You have a committee decision. This is number 14. It's in effect for 5 years. What the arbitrary 5 years? Where does that come from?
That's what East Central's doing. That's it. I mean, we didn't want it to be we go through this whole process and then we have to start over next year after we're at the end of the process. That the amount of time invested for Great River to get to the point of a review committee is significant. That's a lot of resources at one title. We should be doing our due diligence on the front end with $20 and $30 book decisions and not investing hundreds of hours of staff time to review a book. So if we've made a decision that the book stays, I don't want to revisit it.
For five
next.
Years.
Yeah, five yeah, years. Year was, yeah, at least 5 years. You want to go 10, I'd be all up for that.
That explained it. You explained why where you got the 5 years from. I'm good.
Yep.
I think it's That's arbitary weird. Still, but it's an explanation.
It is arbitrary.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. It's very arbitrary.
But when we have kind of studied the amount of staff time that's put into these, I don't want my taxpayers' dollars going toward that any more than we have to. And I don't, you know, just so.
Kind of a risk management.
It is arbitrary.
So have we removed any books in the past 5 years?
Never removed a book. Due to a request for reconsideration. True enough.
We've removed them. They're old.
Yeah, that's true. Otherwise, we'd have a lot of stuff in the corner.
I knew that, but I just wanted to bring that up. it's pretty tough to remove a book.
Yeah. And based on all the legalities you addressed, mm-hmm. I don't think we ever will. Mm-hmm. We got a process, but I don't think we'll ever. Will ever
JC, why don't you talk and then Tina?
Yeah, if that's okay, Mr. Chair. I have two things. One, that review committee and who it'll consist of, it's 6 people. Mm-hmm. I think we should have an odd number.
We talked about that.
I think 6 people is not a good number for a committee that's trying to decide something.
Well, and
do you put an extra board member on or subtract a board member?
Well, and here's okay. So the board member
There's
membership
two board members on it.
Was part of that discussion. It's very difficult to have more than 3 board members on any committee without coming into issues with quorum of personnel and finance. So that's where some of that came from. And we talked about having an odd number. And I personally think forcing a group to come to consensus on a difficult decision might be better than a 4-3 vote. That's just my philosophy. So, you know, if you want a tie-breaking vote, that's fine. But if we can't wrestle it in a 7-member committee, I don't want the information coming back to the Great River Board until it's ready. I don't want the board chair to have to weigh in. And the board chair is involved in the process, so there's a point where the board chair can weigh in as board chair and has that authority to do it. But I would defer.
That is fine?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, Tina had a question.
I just, if everyone has their questions, I do have some comments that I would just like to add at the end. So I want everyone to ask their questions
first. Then I have
first.
One more. Just if that's okay.
Go ahead, Tina.
Just... under collection management, where it says an item may be withdrawn.
What page?
The, 14 on the clean one. Okay. So I don't know what the marked up one is. But under Chapter 5, and it says an item may be withdrawn from the library's collection for all these reasons. Should one of them be as directed by the request for reconsideration process?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
It should. Yes.
That's all. Maybe.
Okay. Just hang on a second. Okay.
No, if you need to, go ahead.
So there's one more thing I want to bring up if you're interested in this. There's an issue going on in Barry, Idaho, Boundary County Library. The executive, because of all the push coming in, people complaining about books and so forth, the executive director is going to quit in September, and they want all the executive board to be thrown out too. And as a result, they redid their policy on selection. And it's really interesting to go look at it if anybody's interested.
What was the name of that?
Boundary County Library in Ferry, Idaho.
Population.
I don't know what the population is. Mm-hmm.
Ferry? F-E-R-R-Y.
F-E-R-R-Y, yeah.
You know, you brought up Christian, conservative, et cetera, the characteristic locally here. I bet you that population pretty much Mormon.
One of the issues there is they want books banned that aren't even in the library yet. It's bizarre.
It's cheaper.
Yeah. As long as they read the book.
Yeah, right. Sorry.
Thank you.
What I'm just going to hand out, it's a handout relevant to the discussion that I'd like to have about the criteria that we're discussing, and I think it's all well, honestly, really well done. It's just I think one of the discussions we've had with people coming to the board is the explicitness of the material. And I know it's in context, and I know
I guess.
Isn't this cool?
Some words I'd like to share with you. I'll just read it so then you can have your comments or just disregard me, however you want to look at it. But so I want to start with the obvious. We craft policy right here. This is what we're doing right here. We're reviewing and updating a policy. We are a board of elected officials and representatives.
Only elected.
And public representatives. I wasn't finished yet. With public dollars. Bringing policy forward. We're updating and determining the criteria to select our collection. The board makes policy decisions related to that. We currently do not allow all books into the library. We've just stated that. We've already discussed that per our collection development policy. I have requested a list that the ones that may be excluded. I had emailed, but I knew that wouldn't be. What are the books that don't come into the library? That would be interesting to know. We currently do not allow pornography as approved by a previous board, except, as I learned recently, if it's requested through an interlibrary loan. We don't allow children to check out R-rated movies, and we don't allow X-rated movies, to my knowledge. So you can say that we already, quote, banned books. We do have a selection criteria. It's what we're talking about. The libraries display and disseminate, there's graphic, sexual, explicit material. You have it in front of you. I'm not saying it's obscene, and I'm not saying it's pornographic. I'm saying that it is graphic, sexually explicit material per 617.293, harmful materials, dissemination, and display to minors prohibited. Subdivision 1, dissemination. It is unlawful for any person knowingly to sell or loan for monetary consideration to a minor. Loaning out. Any picture, photograph, drawing, sculpture, motion picture, film, or a similar visual representation or image of a person or portion of the human body which depicts nudity, sexual conduct, or sadomasochist abuse and which is harmful to minors. Or B, any book, pamphlet, magazine, printed matter, however reproduced, or sound recording which contains any manner enumerated in clause or which contains explicit and detailed verbal descriptions or narrative accounts of sexual excitement, sexual conduct, or sadomasochist abuse, which, taken as a whole, is harmful to minors. That is what I'd like to talk about tonight, the graphic explicit material, the sexual the pictures. To be clear, I'm not objecting to the LGBT or minority stories. I would apply this policy to any graphic, sexually explicit material in the library. This is a cultural debate. A Rasmussen poll found that 89% of parents in the nationwide opposed this graphic, sexual explicit content in school and public libraries. This reflects the community standard, and I believe it should be considered. This discussion is happening around the country. We all see it, hear it, know it. If I were to post this material online, I would be blocked because it's inappropriate content. If I were to present this on the television, the feed would be cut because of inappropriate content. If parents read and show this material at school board meetings, they are repeatedly asked to stop, and the mics are cut because it's inappropriate content. This reflects a community standard. We have the ability as a board to determine what content is allowed in our libraries per the collection development policies, what we're doing tonight. I would like to have consideration that under 4B, under general criteria selection, as a bullet point to read as exclude content with graphic, sexually explicit material. I love libraries. I have volunteered, fundraised, helped design children's spaces, and supported staff in the libraries. I brought my kids to the libraries, my daycare to the library. I love the libraries, and I love what you do. The libraries actively promote library cards to children. Over 80% of your programming is aimed at children. I believe a policy that restricts graphic, sexually explicit content in our library should be excluded in the collection development policies for our children. We are the board of trustees. Trust. I've always found the libraries to be a family-friendly venue with fun and learning and great ideas and diversity. Graphic, sexually explicit pictures, drawings, movies don't need to be in the library to tell great stories. They really don't. This board has an opportunity to craft a policy that excludes this material content from the library, and I would like you to join me to make that happen. And I would like to say also, 13 states, this is on another point of when you talk about kind of community standards or the laws that have been discussed and court cases, this is a different state statute being referenced. 13 states have enacted laws that require a state-issued ID to prove that you are 18 to access online pornography. And that is currently now. So we talk about community standards. What is happening is we're limiting that access. Any book in this library can be accessed by a child. And therefore, that's where I feel that we are following under this subdivision, that we can do better. And we are the policymakers. That's what we're here for. This is what we're supposed to do. We can reflect that, and we can balance that. There are many stories that tell the coming of age without having graphic, explicit pictures in them. There's many of them. 4 million books are published in a year. We can pick the books without this explicit sexual material in it that is a graphic. I'm not talking about the words in it. I am talking about the pictures. And so that is my request for consideration for this board. I think it's a fair request, and I think it's something that's doable. Thank you for your consideration.
Any comments?
Yeah. I would likewise question that if the board would take no action, does that implicitly mean we endorse this?
If we take no action, I would.
I mean, I'm not looking for any action. Yeah. It's a philosophical question. I know it's hard to believe.
To specifically.
Me, but nevertheless, just something to consider.
I believe you specifically asked for something to be under.
Under the selection criteria.
Yeah, under selection criteria. So I would take action too.
But I know that we probably can't do that tonight. You were talking about
work
just
session.
Having a discussion.
Mr. Okay. Chair, so what Tina is saying does not fulfill the First Amendment criteria. So we are saying that we are going to have a separate criteria than the First Amendment criteria,
Well, then we would allow pornography in the library.
This is not pornography.
In absentia, it's under First Amendment.
This is not. This is.
I know. That's why. At it as a whole.
Right, and that's why I'm saying it would be. It would be under explicit sexual material.
Good. Susan, would you care to comment on that at all?
I think the issue is we have to look at the work as a whole. So it may have images that would qualify under her proposed language, but as a whole, it would not be considered pornography.
I'm not saying pornography. I'm saying it's disseminating illicit, according to our state statute, it's illicit material and detailed descriptions and narratives and accounts of sexual excitement. This is under 6.17, 2.295, harmful materials, dissemination and display to minors, prohibited state statute. I'm not talking about pornography or obscenity. Mm-hmm. Those are different court cases and different terminology.
You're talking about images of one book and not the book.
I still don't think it would withstand a challenge. I think that state statute doesn't really apply in this situation. I've never heard of a library being prosecuted under that statute. And it is a criminal statute.
It is. Right.
Okay. Anybody else care to weigh in on that?
The Miller case that you cited, that state statute that she cited basically says the same thing, right?
No, she's talking about a different statute.
Different statute, okay.
Yeah.
So the world is always a compromise. We do things and we compromise a lot. And so I come full circle to back. You're saying we should not let those kind of books in the library, right? And for me, the compromise is we segregate. We don't ban books. We segregate books that we think are inappropriate for minors to one section of the library where, again, children can't walk through, pick it up and look at it, et cetera, and check it out. To me, that's a compromise. Why can we not do that?
I appreciate the idea of compromise because you've known me a while.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always looking for the middle way. I think the hard thing is there's also a case law in place saying that that would be limiting access to people and we'd be at risk of around First Amendment access. And so we're a public library. The hard thing is we're tasked with serving all, which is a tough task.
But doing that, we're not saying you can't check out the book. The book is available.
That was read.
We're saying this is inappropriate for minors to check out unless their parents give permission, et cetera, et cetera.
So these graphics, Jamie and Karen, they're pulled from different books.
These are two different books.
Can you at least tell us where they're located, or you know, page by page?
Sure. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm familiar with these images.
Yeah.
They've been a big part of my life this year. So these images on the first two pages come from It's Perfectly Normal. I think most of them are from the most recent edition. What you should know is the book is mostly text. So the vast majority of this book is not images. It's mostly information about...
There's a lot of images in that book. There's a lot.
Right. There's a lot of images in the book.
For age 10 and up.
But it's not a picture book. A picture book is like you open the book and the whole page is a picture. This is not a picture book. This is a juvenile nonfiction book. That's where the majority of the books in this collection live. Unfortunately, we haven't done a good job of weeding this book because we have them. We have one version going back. Yeah. We've had the book since 94. There's different pictures in some of the books. So these two come from that book. The second one actually comes from Gender Queer. I'm not as familiar with that title. But it is a graphic novel that's in a memoir that's actually cataloged in the adult nonfiction section. It's not in the children's section at this point. So it's two different books.
So I don't know if I got an answer to my question. We cannot...
I would advise against it.
Minors away from books like this.
Based on what my legal review, Susan's legal review, the information I learned in library school, what we're seeing in the national courts, it wouldn't be a good idea. Yeah. We'd probably end up with a lawsuit, and we'd probably lose.
What you're doing by putting that in a restricted area is you're stigmatizing the book, and you're telling people, if you look at this book, you're bad. And that's been addressed in a couple different Supreme Court cases. We can't allow that to develop, that feeling that this book is bad, this book is okay. You know, we're not here to make that standard. We're here to just make sure everything we have meets our Miller criteria.
But there are things.
What standards do we have?
Miller
criteria.
There are things in this life for our children that are good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And we shouldn't be making that determination for the library?
The library's asking
Mr.
our
Chair.
Parents to monitor their children's.
As a parent, I made that decision
yes.
for my
Correct.
Kids.
Yes. Yes.
But I'm not going to tell you what you... I
didn't
want my kids...
Board.
I didn't want my oh, kids right. exposed to certain things, so I didn't... They weren't allowed to check those types of books out.
So...
JC.
I just want to... So this book, I don't know how many have read that. I have read this book. It's... From the pictures, you might say, oh, I don't really like that. The book itself has perfectly legitimate, in my mind, information mm-hmm. for kids. And I'm a mom of five. And so I have... So, right. Mm-hmm. But if it's okay for my kids, why should somebody else say it's not okay... It's not okay
for your kids.
I'm mm-hmm. looking at
if it's okay for
explicit
my kids.
Sexual pictures in it. That's
but
what
we
I'm
have
looking.
To take right. it as a whole. We
as
can't
a whole.
Just
subject
it's just
that. But I'm saying, I'm explaining my point
right.
of view,
right.
and I accept your point of view as well. I did.
Right.
I'm
and
not.
I get that this is, but then the standard becomes somebody's individual belief on what's appropriate for their child is now not appropriate. It is not appropriate for their child. It is now not appropriate for anyone's child. And I think that that's covered in this where we say one family cannot impose their beliefs on another family. And I think that as a policy, right, we're setting policy. So what we want to do is set policy to say we are inclusive of many beliefs and many different views, and we don't want to have legal issues either, but we're inclusive of those things. And parents are it's up to the parents to say, you know what, Bobby, I don't appreciate that book. Let's pick another one. That's what we're saying as a library, as a policy.
Really well said, Jane.
Yes,
yeah.
I told you. My daughter's in med school, and those and the, her books reflect a much more that is more obscene than anything than a medical book. If you're talking about adolescents. And what the body goes through. And
that's your opinion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tina,
yeah.
you're imposing
yes.
your
now
opinion.
You
impose
your
that
opinion
on me
and
or
I'm just
someone else.
It as well.
Question I have. When you guys label these, they come in, this is where it should be on the children's section, or does the panel make that determination? So when a book
when
comes
we're buying
in,
it or as
whether you're buying it or whatever, when that book comes in, you haven't read it, and it's one of these books, again, whatever happens, and you label that book as juvenile or as for children, who labels that book?
Yeah, it's cataloging. So labeling is slightly different than cataloging.
They cataloging,
yeah.
whatever
so
the word it is.
It, Chris had spoken to that earlier in the presentation.
Right.
It depends on how it's coming in from the publisher, if other libraries have cataloged it a certain way.
But who makes that decision to catalog it a certain way?
It comes into our technical services department.
So it's our panel that makes that?
Our staff.
So, again, a compromise maybe if something like this would come in, anybody would want it in the children's section. I don't know. Maybe we can't do that. Let's put it in the juvenile adult or whatever it would be. Is that possible?
Yes. That is in the juvenile section.
Well, I understand that. But moving forward, that's my, you know, the point.
It's, you know, if something's challenged by going through this request for reconsideration process, that would certainly be part of the discussion.
So you could recatalog it if it's challenged.
Mm-hmm. We could move it to a different section.
And
so
no
like
lawsuit.
If genderqueer, the second page, somebody bought that book and it ended up in young adult.
Right.
And so when somebody goes, oh my gosh, I can't believe we put that in young adult. We can move that to the adult section.
And is there a chance for Susan to get, we get sued because we moved it because of that? I mean, there's always a chance to get sued.
Right. If you're moving it, looking at one image or one idea, that's when you get into trouble. If you're saying anything that shows a penis has to be in the adult section, you're going to get into trouble.
It's risk management.
Yeah.
How do you do it, Randy?
Oh, I know. That's why. Yeah, that's why I was just trying to compromise, but that's a tough word too nowadays. You know, so, well, you don't even have to say that. Say, just again, normal common sense. Which we don't even have to bring up penis or this or that. So you know what? This book here, let's just put it over here in this one and don't comment on it. Yeah. Is that how you get around it?
I think you get around it by going through the criteria. As long as you have a rational basis of why you're cataloging a book somewhere else, you're going to be covered. But if your basis is, oh my God, it shows a penis, that's not a
rational
basis.
My basis is I don't like the face in the mirror. I mean, see what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. You can make any excuses just to please some people that come in here. I agree too. You shouldn't have this out in front of the kids, but it's parents too. But yeah. If we could just say, yep, if they challenge it, let's put her over there because of the mirror, then maybe that's something we could do.
As a whole, though, Randy, you have to look at the book as a whole.
Right.
And what it says. Yeah, these pictures are shocking, of course. I wouldn't want my grandkids to see just this. But they had questions of where they're going in life. Where are you going to go? You get them professional help, or would this help them figure out who they are? I don't know. I'm grasping, but at the end of the day, I think it has some validity to be in the library, and it's not pornography or smut.
Well, I'm not trying to take it out of the library. I'm just trying to recatalog it and put it somewhere
else.
Yeah,
I hear you.
I guess my question was the community standards. It's vague, and that's where my direction is on this. There are community standards. You can feel that there's been this debate, and there will continue to be. It's going to continue to be that we've gone too far in the how do you want to say it, explicitness of material. This stuff didn't. This is always in the library. It wasn't.
Well.
This is a book that's been around since 1994.
Yeah.
And it's only the last 2 years that this has become an issue. So you explain to me where that came from.
Yeah.
I mean, it's political. It's what it is. It's a football.
Since 94.
Yes. And if it's been in the library since 94, you've got a subjective group that decided to push it.
I was trying, when I shared, was that it's being debated and discussed in states are passing legislation. This is not some naive, my opinion. This is a it is a community discussion to be had, and I'm not angry because we disagree. I'm not at all. We all live together, and we're all here on this board to make some good decisions. It's okay to disagree, but to just make a decision out of fear because we might get sued isn't one. That's why I was trying to bring up the community standards, the objectives that have been, you know, I can't post this online on my Facebook page because it's. You know, because I promote it or I disagree with it. They'll block it regardless.
So you're posting, not posting it because you're scared of being blocked. So again,
no, I post it anyway. I get blocked all the time. So, I mean, but I'm just saying there's a standard, right? There's a standard online. That's what I'm saying. There's standards when they cut you off at the school board. There's a standard being put into place. There's a standard being when the TV has to blur it out. There's a standard in place. That's where I stand on this, is that we have a community standards that are reflective.
Okay.
That's all.
Chair, can I start talking about the other books that I really don't think are appropriate for kids to be seeing?
Sure, have at it.
I mean, I would have a whole different topic. This isn't one of them for me. So, and I think that would be similar around this entire table. Every one of us.
Yeah.
I walked into what was the title of the book I saw when I came into one of our committee meetings? I walked in and it says, How to Train a White Supremacist, or How to Teach someone to be a White Supremacist. I was horrified.
We all were.
We all were. I shared that title with the committee. I said, I want this book reviewed. I want this book recalled. But in a deep dive of the book, you realize in its entirety, it's really a good book. And it's how our schools and our education systems have been teaching our children somewhat to be white supremacists. Very good book after I looked through it a little in depth. But the title, I gasped.
Caught your attention.
Yeah, caught my attention. Horrified. As a whole, it was fine. Yeah. But that one title, oh my God, I was horrified. Because I believe that that's happening in our world right now also. So I think everyone around this table would have certain subject matters they would want their children not to be exposed to. But that's my decision as a parent. I lived at the libraries with my three kids. Their dad is a doctor. We had pictures of penises and vaginas and different things all over our house when he was preparing for lectures. And I would say, Rico, pick these things up, you know? The kids are walking over these books. But we also provided those books for our children when they were young, because that was important to us. So we would have a difference of opinion of what's appropriate for my children, and JC probably would feel different with her children.
Okay. Well said.
So is this a summary? We can't remove a book or move a book to a certain section in the library? Is that a fair conclusion?
No.
No,
you can move a book. But you're basing it on criteria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My problem is, like you said, that you're restricting a book. You're labeling a book restricted. That's where we really get into trouble.
Okay, so you can move it to an adult section?
Well, there again, you have to be careful. If it's really, if the audience really is young adolescents, then why are you moving it to an adult section? Are you trying to hide it from the actual intended audience? Yeah. And if you are, why? I mean, does it truly meet, you know, the Miller standards?
Yeah. So we're pretty well blocked from doing anything.
I think you have to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I think there's a reason books have never been taken out of libraries. I mean, we have not had a book removed ever from this library. This new bubbling up of especially LGBTQ issues is, these books have been in the library since the 90s at least, if not longer.
And I agree with that. Books should be in the library,
yep.
But I have the opinion similar to Tina's. There's some topics, some issues, some things that are inappropriate for minors. And if our policy is it's up to the parents to police it, well, that's a policy.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just like to say civilizations that have burned books because they don't agree with the what is written in that,
mm-hmm.
We all know the history of those civilizations and where those have ended up.
Correct. Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, what is our next step? Where do we go from here?
Well,
are we done with the discussion?
The plan was we'd get the feedback from today's meeting.
Okay.
We'd take any edits into consideration as we draft the final version of the policy, and it would be presented to the Great River Board at the November meeting for consideration and approval, hopefully.
Is, Karen, can you, is it going to be of the committee that we established going to do the reviewing, or?
Yeah. I guess when we ended the committee meeting last time, we hadn't anticipated exactly what this discussion would look like. We had ideas how it might go. We didn't know if the Oxford comma debate would be a heated one. And so we left our options open as to what we would do next. And I think it would probably make a lot of sense to at least try to get a virtual meeting, if not an in-person meeting, if everybody.
You mean this next review?
I
thought you meant the board.
No.
That's a different group.
We would
take the group that we sent to do this.
Yeah. Yep. And try to meet between now and the early November deadline of.
And then bring it to the November board meeting.
Yep. Our goal is still November board meeting.
So, Mr. Chair, that's a great point, though. But did we give them enough information to make the changes? Or are they going to bring back the changes and we're going to have the same discussion? Well, I don't like this.
I think they took the changes. I know.
I wrote down as much as I could. I'm assuming And we've got the audio.
Yeah.
So.
And they were modest changes. It was wordsmithing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can read through what I wrote down and if you want me to. Strives versus is. That's where we started. Strives versus is. Get rid of the word aims, maybe. Cut that. May versus should. I'll find where you said it. Intended versus builds, or move that to builds. Maybe bring back suitability of the subject, question on being a patron, add more to the process, what's the additional criteria, the amount of time, number 14. I'll have to go back and see what that meant.
5 years.
5 years. Oh, yeah, that was the five-year thing. Committee, number of people, 6 versus 7, backing up to the top of my document. We started with public money. Whether we need to be more explicit about that, questions about whether email should be considered as a suitable format to submit the form, usability of the form, merits of content as a whole was questioned, bringing back that suitability bullet we talked about, vendor selection there were questions about, relevance to community needs came up, maybe add a bullet to Chapter 5 around the reconsideration committee. We should look at Ferry, Idaho's policy, talking about whether to exclude books from the library around graphic pictorial content. And then there was discussion of 13 states with issued ID access around pornography, excluding content with graphic sexually explicit materials. Was there anything? Did anybody capture anything else?
Okay.
I'm really sorry.
Nope.
I'm really sorry. I had actually a couple questions. And I think that these are, one, I think is more, you're going to say this is more the process, which is fine. But I'm wondering on some of these when it's, you know, the receipt of the appeal within 15 business days, do you have to be a little bit more explicit about when that 15 days starts? Just in the process, is it when the branch gets it? Is it when the
patron gets it?
Yeah, those types of things. I don't, just so that there's no argument when there is a request, like, oh, I thought it was 15 days from this. Maybe be a little bit more explicit on some of those, or not throwing it out there. And then the other, and then along with that, like, what happens when more than one request is received for the same book? Like, are you going to do this as a group? Are you going to, or do you just pick the first one and say, hey, we're doing it with this other person. You'll just have to wait and see what our request, what our process is for all of this. You might want to consider talking about that. And then the one other thing was where it said the reconsideration panel, all reconsideration panel decisions require the final approval of the associate director of collection development or their designee. What does that mean that they need the final approval? So if the, what does that mean?
So the panel would not include Jamie or myself.
Okay.
Before they respond to a patron, we want Jamie to look at it.
Got it.
Just to be sure.
Some of your questions,
good
JC.
Job. Good things.
Some of your questions on the process, the form, and it's kind of kicking it down the road. We wanted to get this first. The form was going to acknowledge, okay, we received it this date, therefore the clock's, you know, kind of the clock starts ticking.
Okay. So. Yeah, that's what I...
But that hasn't been finalized until...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, you got to do one thing at a time.
Yep.
And we all have a long drive home. Well, some of us have a really long drive home. If you think of something on your way home and you're like, oh, I wish I had said that, maybe they should think about it, you can shoot me an email. We'll talk about it with the committee. We've been getting that along the way from multiple people, and that has come through to the committee, so know that those voices have been heard. And then we talked about public providing feedback. So if you hear from people who want to provide feedback to the board about this or to the committee, please redirect them to the website or send me an email so that I can forward it to the committee for consideration, because the board's practice around public open forum is that if there's an item on the agenda, it's not for the public open forum at that point. Yep. So if we're considering this in November, ideally the public open forum wouldn't be about the collection development policy.
We will go that route right now and say that that's not going to happen because our goal is to bring this to the board for approval at our November meeting. And I will not allow public input on that subject at that meeting.
We don't have a public, we're not required for any public forum or anything like
that. No, this is just something the board's done since 2009. But the practice has always been with a public forum that it's not on the agenda and it's 10 minutes and 2 minutes per speaker. So I just wanted to acknowledge that, knowing that we've had a lot of people at public forum in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But
it does take place at every regular meeting. If that's
but there's no, re- it's
but
not.
We don't have to have a public hearing.
No.
That's, that was
no.
my question.
Yep.
Hearing versus the public
forum.
If we
had a public hearing, then we'd have to let everybody.
It'd be a totally different process.
That's, I didn't know.
Mr. Chair, what is the date for our November meeting, just to clarify?
21st is what I have.
Like, is that going to work?
Need eight people.
It is Thanksgiving week.
Right.
That's Thanksgiving week.
Tuesday before.
Family in town. All the town.
Need at least town right after that meeting?
I'm going to be bring them. I'm just kidding.
So
bring
it,
the turkey.
Are we having a personnel meeting and all that through there, or no? Or just
we'll need to have a personnel meeting. I can announce here that our associate director of HR, Ryan, has decided to pursue life in education.
Aww.
I know, right? So we do have the position posted, but my review's in the mix, which I need to talk to Susan about. So we'll probably need to do something with the personnel committee in relation to my review, and then we'll have to take around policies related to emergency sick and safe time, and I think there's a couple other things in the queue. Finance committee will need to meet. We'll need to look at budget projection or budget 2023 finance projections, like where we think we're going to land in December.
Okay.
Make designations around that. So there'll be it'll be a full night.
Is there a lot of people that have issues with travel?
That's
been brought up. I mean, is it something that we want to throw out here now in case November rolls around?
I could make it. So I was just raising it for just
a consensus.
I will not be here.
So let's do a show of hands of who will possibly be here.
What was the date again?
November 21st.
Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I will be here.
The 21st.
Same day as your board meeting.
That's already
passed. Lisa, raise your hand.
But we might do something for staffing if we can pull it together. This is going to take some time.
There's a slight chance
I
might not be.
I don't know.
You need some help getting out of that.
Oh, I got it down already. Okay. 21st.
And we could move it to the 14th if that's better for more people, but that's a little closer deadline. Which means, just saying, like currently the board
deadline.
I mean,
we moved this one up, so it's actually the same. It's the same time frame in between.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so. And is there any reason that it has to be at the November meeting that we have the fight?
Well, we will have different board members in January, and so I would prefer not to start the conversation over. That's just my personal preference.
And we normally don't have a December meeting, correct?
We typically don't. We have one marked on the calendar, but that's going to be just as close to Christmas as this.
Sounds like most people can make it, right?
Yeah, it looked like we have enough people that can make it.
Yeah, the committees might get sketchy because quorum's four. But if we have to move the committee meetings, we can do that. We could move those up.
Okay.
One of my thoughts was maybe personnel meets for my review separately from all of this and then take that out of the equation because that's usually a longer meeting anyway. And then we could do the other stuff.
Is there a vice chair of finance?
It's going to be Randy's last meeting, so he needs
to
see.
I might be gone already. I might be heading south.
Among others. Are we going to have something at that meeting to fight for the people who are leaving?
Yeah, we usually do. I think Mary is at your last meeting, too. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Mary, you've been on
in November.
Yeah. Wayne's gone, too, aren't you?
No,
nope, we got Wayne home for a year. But, yeah.
I know. That's maybe wishful thinking on your part.
Of Okay, so I think we're good with the 21st.
21st?
Yeah.
Ago. Okay, awesome.